Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America on this Saturday morning. Once again, I'd like to thank our friends at Gulfstream for their sponsorship of this program, some of the other programming and events here at Capital OTB during their championship meet. Appreciate the support of Gulfstream Park. Coming up on today's show, a little bit later on, we'll be joined by Nick Tamaro, the announcer down at Sam Houston Park, and kicked off the announcing career a couple of days ago with their opening day on Thursday down at Sam Houston. But we'll have Nick come on and set up the Sam Houston season for us a little bit, and maybe give a couple ideas for this evening, down at Sam Houston. But we're going to start things out with our friend Mike Curry from America's Best Racing. You can find his work over at the ABR website. And over the past month and a half or so, Mike's been taking a look at the late season two-year-old races. And last weekend, the first brush of Derby Trail three-year-old races as the calendar turned and the two-year-olds became three-year-olds. So I thought we'd talk a little early Derby Trail with Mike Curry. Mike, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Happy to have you on. And update, you and I were talking before we went on the air. Update people, weather situation at Lexington. It's kind of interesting. Some tracks canceled over the past couple of days. We're here in upstate New York, where as I drove in this morning, it was freezing cold. I'm on the handicapping show prior with our colleague Brian Addo, who's down at Gulfstream. And this time of year, we always look forward to talking to him to give us the envy weather forecast. But I guess you can give us the envy weather forecast in that we're envious that we're living here this time as far as snow. You guys got hit, I guess, the last week or so down in the Lexington area.
Yeah, pretty unusual for Lexington. About 9 to 10 inches. Everybody had to break out their shovels. And, I mentioned to you before, I love Lexington. It's a fantastic city. But handling snow is not one of the strengths of the city. So pretty much shut everything down. And we're just kind of still digging our way out. And hopefully we get a little bit of sun here in the next couple of days and melt away some of this white stuff we've got.
Yeah, as I said to you, we missed kind of the brunt of that storm up here. I got a little bit, it was kind of, I had to brush my car off. But so far up here, knock wood, we haven't gotten that major snowstorm yet. The longer that lasts, the better, though. But we can always, this time of year, look for a little sunshine down in the south, and we can look for a little sunshine overall as horse players in that it's Derby Trail time, one of the fun times of the year for all of us, because it's the one kind of division that really, I always say, gives us a season. I'll ask if you agree. I think at two-year-olds, you got the preseason, and then maybe January and February, you have the regular season. You get into March and April, you got the playoffs, and then comes the Kentucky Derby. And I think that's kind of what fans like to plug into. It's our version of some of the seasons that other sports have. That Derby Trail gives you that look throughout, and then the big championship of the Triple Crown, the three Triple Crown races.
Yeah, I agree. I think, especially in recent years, with the set schedule and stuff, I think it's kind of put a little bit of structure to it. And I agree, like a lot of times for me, the two-year-old season is just kind of cobbling together a list of horses to keep an eye on. And, you're looking for breakout performances, maiden races, allowance races, things like that, how they do in the stakes. But once you get into late January into early February, it really hits that, the meat of the schedule. And to me, there is that season aspect to it where it feels like you kind of, and almost that last round of preps feels like the first round of the playoffs, and then you get to the end of the playoff, the finals, the championship, whatever you want to call it, when you get to the Derby, the Preakness and the Belmont Stakes. But yeah, you kind of get into this this extended season. And I do think for me, it's the highlight of the year. I always look forward to the new crop of three-year-olds.
Yeah, I totally agree. And again, you have written about for the last month and a half or so some of these stakes races. So we'll start back last weekend and look at one. We'll cover the horses you've covered at ABR to start with, and then maybe get an overall look at some of the other races that were just this past weekend. But one of those, we'll start with this past week and then go back to some of the late two-year-old races. The Jerome last week at Aqueduct. A mile down at Aqueduct, $150,000 up for grabs. Cook Creek, we're going to take a look at the stretch run here. Cook Creek was the favorite. And is the as the one horse winds up, a little bit of a disappointing third. Cavassier, the number six, 4-1 for Kelly Breen. Jose Ortiz on board, gets it done. Strings together victories. Got a victory in the prior start going a mile and an eighth at Aqueduct. Won that one by a neck. That was the fourth career start, the maiden breaker. This was the fifth career start. Got it done. The 73 buyer figure, I don't know if it jumps off the page. I'm wondering if this horse, maybe given what we saw two back, is better at two turns. So maybe we're looking forward to the return to that kind of a distance for Cavassier. But what did you think of the performance in the Jerome?
Yeah, I agree. The win in his previous start at a mile and an eighth gives me a little bit of hope. And obviously, he's got that terrific pedigree. You know, you're looking at a colt by Tappet out of Take Charge Brandy. So, you know, there's reason to dream big. But I guess my big concern with him is, as you mentioned, he isn't that fast yet, you know, and he's going to have to improve pretty significantly, I think, to become a serious player. I think the sheets had him at 15 and three quarters. It just across the board, 73 buyer, you mentioned, 78 Equibase speed figure, Brisnet at an 82. I can see where you can dream, but there just needs to be a pretty significant level of improvement, I think, before you can take him as a legitimate contender. Now, you know, as you well know, three-year-olds can take those jumps, especially in late winter and early spring. So we'll see what happens, but I'm a little bit skeptical.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, that 73 was a lifetime best buyer number. It was a mile in the winter at Aqueduct. I mean, anybody out of that group maybe has, you know, second string three-year-old stakes in the future at best. It seems like that performance didn't knock me out by any means, but we will see. The blinkers certainly made a difference for Cavassier. I should mention that they added the blinkers in the second start before last weekend, a close-up second, and now the two wins. So the blinkers made a difference. But again, the buyer figure didn't jump up significantly enough to really think that one is one to jump on totally. Let's go back and look at some of those late-season two-year-old races you have written about at America's Best Racing. Back on December 11th, the Los Alamitos Futurity. Messier was the favorite, the number three horse for Bob Baffert. He also had Barossa in there as the second choice at 3-1. But Doug O'Neill gets it done for Redham Racing with Slow Down Andy. Slow Down Andy is going to be the number five horse here, again, in the Los Al Futurity. 5-1 as the third choice. And the 85 buyer, decent for Slow Down Andy. What were your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I think across the board, speed figures kind of nice jumps. I went into it not thinking I was going to like him as much as I did, just because sometimes those, you know, 4, 5, 6 horse fields in Southern California, I sometimes have trouble gauging, you know, how good they were as far as, but he did show me something stretching out. I think I probably need a little bit of convincing that he wants to go all of a mile and a quarter. Overall, you know, I did like it better than I thought. Like you mentioned, speed figures are pretty good. 13 on the sheets, 101 Brisnet figure kind of jumped out for me too. So, and obviously Doug O'Neill and those connections, they know what to do with a good one. So, I wound up pretty high on Slow Down Andy, better than I thought I would be.
Yeah, by Nyquist. So, yeah, again, the connections, you would kind of think they've been there, they've done that. So you would think they're now continuing on the trail, certainly with the horse that stretched out to that mile and a 16th successfully last time. He is more one to watch for me than, as I say, Cavassier in New York. One I definitely think is – two I think are definitely worth watching. Let's go back to December 4th. And you wrote about Mo Donegal as well in the Remsen. Mo Donegal is going to be the number one horse here. But lightly raised Zandon, I thought running second, and Zandon was actually the favorite. Zandon's the number seven horse. Mo Donegal gets it done by a nose, though, over Zandon. I think both of these are worth watching. They both came out of this race with an 89 buyer, which I think, you know, late in the year for a two-year-old is completely legit. So your thoughts on the Remsen? As I say, I thought both of these are worth watching going forward.
Yeah, I agree. I think they were both, I think they're about 10 lengths clear of the third place finisher. I think there's a tendency for everybody to be a little bit skeptical of the Remsen, just because it hasn't necessarily led to a whole slew of quality three-year-olds. But I thought this was a pretty good race. The final eighth was in, maybe 12 and between 12 and 1 and 12 and 2. Obviously, they both ran well in a mile and an eighth. Like you said, the speed figures came back pretty strong. And yeah, I like the top two. I thought they really separated themselves from the rest of the field. And I think you could make a case for either one moving forward. I did, like you said, I thought Zandon ran a good race too. So I'm with you. I like that race better than I thought I would. And I try, you know, as we talked about, just not to get too hyped about a two-year-old that early in the campaign, but I was impressed.
Yeah, and I just pulled up the list of recent winners in the all the winners in the Remsen, and you would think a mile and an eighth that time of year would really play into the Derby, but the last few years, Brooklyn Strong, who was a little star-crossed, I think, with the way his career was managed, but Shotsky, Maximum Mischief, Catholic Boy was in the mix going back to 2017, but then Motown. You go down, you go further, there were some really nice horses, but not necessarily for the Derby. So it's a funny race, certainly. But I will note, to the folks who jumped in, to me, way too early, but Derby Pool 1 was November 28th it closed, so you were a week before this Remsen. And I will applaud the people. If you jumped in for Mo Donegal, you got 37-1. If you jumped in on Zandon, you got 56-1. And for a November pool, those are about the odds I'd want. So I think the folks who took a shot a week before the Remsen, I think were rewarded and maybe have some fun tickets to watch, at least for another couple months or so.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind having a ticket on either one of those at that price. Yeah, that's how I approach the Derby Futures pool too. You know, you're not going in there betting the field, or I'm not at least, you know, just trying to pick maybe one or two that you think you get a value price on that 3 months from now, you won't get anything near that.
Yeah, you have to look for, you know, 25-1 or above. And the November pool, I think, like I say, 37-1 or 56-1. Now I'm talking, but the November pool, you're still betting they're just going to make it there, much less win the race. So you definitely want the odds. I can't jump into that November pool, but some of the other pools, if I look and I see my price, I'll jump in and play around a little bit. Also, another race you wrote about, another late two-year-old race you wrote about at America's Best Racing, Kentucky Jockey Club on November 27th. Smile Happy, worth taking a look at. Smile Happy is going to be the number 8 horse here for Kenny McPeak. I have said it since probably a couple of weeks before this race. Kenny McPeak had the tough Saratoga season, where his barn went into the quarantine and it set off his training schedule and whatnot. But he got out of Saratoga and got into the fall, and his horses were running really well, particularly the two-year-olds at the end of the season. And I think Smile Happy is one that is going to be interesting to watch. And I will note, comes out of this with a solid 90 buyer figure.
Yeah, and a good number on the sheets had him for, I think, was it 10 and a quarter. I like Ron Happy as a sire, too. I think there's a pretty good chance that some of his runners stretch out. You know, obviously, a win at a mile and a 16th at Churchill Downs is always nice to have when you're looking at a potential future Derby prospect. Family of Funny Side, I believe. I liked him a lot. You know, again, usually the two-year-olds I'm pretty dubious about when I'm writing early. The first few of these Derby prospects profiles. But this year, there a few of them, like Mo Donegal and Smile Happy, I think there's a chance. You know, I look at them and I think I can see down the road them winning a major Derby prep race and being a big factor in May.
Yeah, and the Kentucky Jockey Club, obviously, run over Churchill Downs. To me, that's a bonus as well. You have a horse who's already proven over the Churchill Downs strip.
Sure. Two turns at Churchill Downs, win in his pocket already. Like I said, the speed figures, I think it was 90 buyer, you mentioned, 96 Equibase, 98 Brisnet. The sheets had him as a for a two-year-old at that time of year. I'm impressed. We'll see how he comes back. Have we heard yet where his next start's going to be?
I haven't, no. I will ask you also about, I always say that when I'm in here handicapping, And at this time of year, as the Churchill horses go to other venues, I'll mention in the handicapping when I'm in the afternoon doing that. To me, that fall meet at Churchill, I think the two-year-old races overall are really salty and you have to pay attention to them, but particularly the stakes races. So when you can win one of those late fall meet two-year-old races at Churchill, to me, that's a bonus.
I agree. Yeah, I definitely, I think that the two-year-old races at Churchill have been strong, specifically recent years. They just really boosted it up, and it's been, you've seen a lot of really good horses come out of there. Sometimes not always Derby trail horses, but for other key stakes down the road.
Well, for us and our friends up here, Tis the Law a few years ago coming out of that meet. Now I wanted to go back and just get some of your thoughts on the three other three-year-old races from last weekend, because I think some of those certainly will play into this, at least the early steps on the Derby trail. Let's start by looking at the Mucho Macho Man last week at Gulfstream. Simplification won that one for Antonio Sano. Simplification is going to be the number three horse here. Strike Hard was the 4-5 favorite. The number two horse winds up second. Chart margin, pretty solid four lengths for Simplification. Lightly raced. Two starts before this race, he had run a 92 buyer figure and broken his maiden very impressively. The follow-up at 30 cents to the dollar was a little bit disappointing, but rebounded nicely here. Maybe the follow-up was a bounce. I mean, I certainly think that's potential, because he runs another 90 buyer figure this past Saturday. So Simplification off of that effort, and the, as I say, the maiden breaker two starts before, Simplification seems like a horse to keep our eyes on as well.
Yeah, I really like the Mucho Macho Man. Final eighth in 12-2 after setting the pace in the opening half was 45-4. So he came home pretty fast after setting a solid pace. Speed figures, again, were good. A little bit inconsistent, as you mentioned. Yeah, I guess it, now when I think about it, maybe it was a bounce out of that big win. I also like the pedigree, too. It's interesting. Epicenter sort of bred along the same line as him, Not This Time, out of a Candy Ride mare, and he's from the family of Bishado. I'm not definitely not a pedigree handicapper, but when it comes to the Triple Crown races, I always look at it. Just because I think that you can get an idea of how far they're going to want to carry their speed. I don't think, you know, I don't think you can look at that and say, this is going to be a fast horse or a slow horse. But I do think when it comes to distance, there's a factor there. Trainer obviously had a pretty good one a few years back, Gunavera, that he handled nicely. So, I thought Simplification actually probably was my favorite of the ones from last weekend.
I will now tee up the one that was most impressive to me, and that was down at Oaklawn in the Smarty Jones. I thought Dash Attack was the one that impressed me the most. Went out for the aforementioned Kenny McPeak, and again, it seems like once he got out of Saratoga and later in the season, his horses were running very well. Dash Attack, the number one horse here, coming out of a maiden victory early in December down at Oaklawn in the career debut effort, and follows that up with a win at 7-1, a pretty nice win. The chart margin's a couple of lengths, and the buyer figure, I think, a solid 82. His maiden victory was a 74. The 82's okay. It was only the second career start, steps into stakes company. So on the weekend, I was impressed by Dash Attack. What were your thoughts on that performance?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing I would say is I'd like to see him on a fast track before I get too excited about him. But I agree with you. I thought he looked responsive to me. Obviously showed off that turn of foot that he had showed in his maiden race, too, where, when the jockey gives him his cue, he accelerates. You know, there's other runners that you see that are more grinders, or ones that, you know, want to get to the front and just hold on. He's got that push button acceleration that I like. On paper, he didn't fly home, but, Oaklawn, to me, a lot of times is more of like a build a foundation type track. Then you're not going to see a lot of flashy finishing times there. I thought he ran well too. I didn't like him quite as much as Simplification, but I did think it was a nice performance visually. Like I said, I would like to see him on a fast track before I invest any stock in him. But in pedigree perspective, Munings is a nice sire, especially for a sprinter. He's had some really nice, capable two-turn runners, and the dam by Hardspun wanted a mile and an eighth. So yeah, so, some room to dream here, I think.
Yeah, I mean, as you alluded, the mile in 139.44. So he wasn't blazing by any means, but that's kind of mitigated a little bit by maybe the 82 buyer, and they, you know, obviously looking at the track during the day and whatnot. All of these, it's going to be interesting to see what the next step on the Derby Trail is, if they can validate things. One more from last weekend. And again, you kind of mentioned this earlier. It's hard to know what to make of some of these Southern California races with the short fields and Bob Baffert tending to dominate often. And Bob Baffert did dominate last week in the Sham, running 1-2. Rockefeller, who had come out of a win in New York in the previous race, went off as a 3-2 favorite. Rockefeller is the four horse here, but Cannot Catch stablemate, also trained by Bob Baffert, Newgrange, ridden by John Velasquez, who I think wound up in Southern California specifically to wind up on these kind of Baffert horses. But Newgrange gets it done. The chart margin just under three lengths here. And Newgrange, 88 buyer. What were your thoughts on the Sham?
Yeah, again, it's a small field, but it did look to me like it had some quality to it. You know, I've always kind of liked Doviat Class. So, you know, I think it's probably a legitimate race. I guess one question I have, though, is, you know, when you look at a horse from the Baffert stable, if they're not going to get Derby points, is where are they going to go next? Or are they going to stay with Bob? I'm not sure. You know, at this point, it's such a big question. And, you know, taking a horse from the Baffert stable and putting him somewhere else and pointing to the Derby is just such a big question. But I thought Newgrange looked really good in the win, very professional in the stretch. Looked like he lengthened stride nice late. He's another one where you look at the pedigree by Violence. The Empire Maker mare, I guess, gives you a little bit of hope, but I'm a little bit worried about how he's going to stretch out as the distances get longer.
Yeah, both of those, Newgrange and Rockefeller, same ownership, Starlight, Maticat. But it is going to be interesting to see how this whole Baffert Derby story plays out, because you can figure, well, I got a talented three-year-old, I'll bounce around to make a lot of money, we'll go to the Arkansas Derby, we'll go here, we'll go there, we won't necessarily go to the Kentucky Derby. But most of these big owners, I don't know whether that is the I think if you have a good three-year-old, you want to wind up in the Kentucky Derby. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. And it's going to have to play out sooner rather than later as far as Derby points.
Yeah, I mean, I think the decision's probably got to be made. And in fact, I kind of thought that the decision would be made by now.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, just factor in the, you know that Baffert's going to have them ready for a target date. He's proven that over the years. And then move into a different trainer with, you know, it's just if that happens, I shouldn't say that, you know, like you said, it's possible that maybe they just point for other races. But I mean, you have to think, you know, the Derby's an awfully enticing race to, you don't want to be sitting at home on the first Saturday in May when everybody else, not with a good horse, you know, you got a good horse, you want to be there.
That's why these big guys are getting in and spending the money they're spending. They want to be there the first Saturday in May. So as I say, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out, and it will have to happen fairly soon, you would think, with the Derby points situation. Mike, as always, really appreciate the conversation, the thoughts. Just wanted to kick things off here early in the year with some Derby Trail thoughts so we can all get in the correct frame of mind. As I say, we're coming out of the preseason and hitting what is kind of the regular season now, so we'll all start thinking about it. We'll check out your columns at America's Best Racing, and we will talk again along the Derby Trail and beyond.
Sounds great. Always a lot of fun. Thanks so much for having me.
Appreciate it. Mike Curry, and again, you can find his work at the America's Best Racing website. Check that out. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do some news and notes a little bit later. As promised, Nick Tamaro from Sam Houston Park. We'll talk about the upcoming season, which is just underway. Nick is the new announcer down at Sam Houston. Maybe get a couple ideas for this afternoon as well. That'll be a little bit later. But news and notes right after this break. Stay tuned.
Betway's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you where's the best sports bar in the Capital Region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku, try it now.
Welcome back to Racing Across America on the OTB TV network. As you saw during the commercial, I always like to remind people, if you know people outside the area, and we get people all the time, summertime, gee, I'd love to watch this when I go home. And have to remind people, it's been about a year now. It was about this time last year where we appeared on Roku. And in fact, I got a lot of great comments up at Saratoga from people who were outside the area and had caught on to Roku. But if you know those kind of people who come visit during the summer and, geez, we'd love to watch the network the rest of the year, tell them we are available on Roku. Go to the Roberts channel and you'll find us as a kind of a sub-channel over there. All right, news and notes. The NTRA Moment of the Year voting is now available, and I'm just looking. You go to the NTRA website and you can vote. Voting closes February 2nd, so you still have, 3-4 weeks here until February 2nd, and again, it's the NTRA website. Interesting. 11 of the most memorable moments being in quotes, because I don't know whether they're all necessarily moments, but jockey Flavien Prat wins 6 consecutive races on March 12th at Santa Anita. Latruska in the Apple Blossom upsets Eclipse Award winner Monomoy Girl. That one is intriguing to me, because then Latruska went on to just have the super spectacular season. Essential Quality holding off Hot Rod Charlie in the Battle to the Wire at the Belmont Stakes. Again, another one that is notable to me. Steve Asmussen winning the becoming the all-time winningest trainer. Did that up at Saratoga on August 7th. And again, that was certainly a notable one for us up here at Saratoga with his win. And I was celebrating in the box with his kids, and they came down, and there was a whole ceremony there up at Saratoga as Asmussen becomes the all-time winningest trainer. So from a Saratoga, from a Homer perspective, that one is kind of interesting, Asmussen becoming the all-time winningest trainer up at Saratoga. And there we see 9,446 victories added to since then, obviously. But again, it was that was a moment, and it was a fun moment, certainly. And again, what was notable about that, maybe even more than just the number of victories and whatnot, it was notable it happened at Saratoga, because Steve, in that week, you know, as he's approaching these kind of records, everybody's paying attention. Well, as Asmussen does, he had horses running at, I don't know, at least 3 or 4 different venues. And so that it wound up actually happening at Saratoga, where he was, just made it kind of even more special. It was fun, as they say. So a family was there, and they brought in his parents via satellite television and a whole ceremony that was kind of nice. Took the racing day, took a little bit of a break to kind of celebrate that. But that was fun for those of us up at Saratoga. Another Saratoga notable, I'm going to be interested to see, and I don't know, I hope they do put out the voting totals, because I'm not sure where I would go, but this would certainly rank up. In the Forego Stakes at Saratoga, where Frenzy Fire reaches over and tries to take a chunk out of Yaupon, that was on Travers Day up there, and this is just, I mean, this is insane. Everybody who saw it said, you know, if you've watched racing long enough, you've seen things like this happen, but not for like 15 strides or whatever. And just wound up to be one of those moments at Saratoga that people will certainly talk about for years to come. Yeah, I was there. You remember that one? And the jockeys, and boy, I mean, it's lucky that, you know, he reaches over and he kind of grabs the bridle of the other horse as well. So lucky it wound up coming out as well as it did. But Frenzy Fire tries, and Dave Grenig immediately kind of then reflected on, it was a year or so before that another horse had tried to take a chunk out of Frenzy Fire late in a race. I want to say down at Parks in a stakes race. So I get, maybe that's where he learned it from, but that was interesting. Diversity takes a step forward. George Leonard becomes the first African-American trainer to compete in the Breeders' Cup World Championships. So that's a nice moment as well. The Godolphin Appleby Triple in the Breeders' Cup turf. And that one, I'm just looking here at the three races, Ybar, Space Blues, Modern Games. And so Godolphin and Appleby with the Breeders' Cup Triple. Japanese Duo, a couple of Japanese runners win at the Breeders' Cup. Nick's Go completes a brilliant campaign in the Breeders' Cup Classic. And again, these are all the moments, the 11 moments that are up for vote. Pink Floyd Finale, the seven-time Canadian champion Pink Lloyd caps a brilliant career with a victory in the Kennedy Road Stakes at Woodbine. The nine-year-old Pink Lloyd, fan favorite, 2017 Canadian Horse of the Year. And then finally, Taking Flight is what they're labeling this moment. But Flightline, with the what they say is a jaw-dropping performance, I would totally agree. In the Malibu, a 118 buyer figure for West Point Thoroughbreds and Company, John Sadler training Flightline with the big performance a couple of weeks ago in the Malibu, the final on the list of 11 possible NTRA moments of the year. And as I say, I would have a tough time choosing. At the Asmussen becoming the winningest trainer, Frenzy Fire and Yao Pan, they're Saratoga moments, but I think they're great moments as well. And Flightline with the just phenomenal performance in the Malibu. Those are all kind of striking to me. But it's a great list. And again, I tout it so you can pop over to the NTRA website and make your vote. Vote for the NTRA moment of the year, which I believe, yeah, it will get recognized at the Eclipse Awards. So stop by and choose your moment of the year. Did want to mention sad news a couple of days ago. Susie O'Kane passed away. And folks watching the network may remember. I mean, we're going back a ways, but Susie O'Kane actually had a show here on Capital OTB TV, Susie's Corner. And again, this is going back a while. She's far better known, though, as a member of the New York Thoroughbred Breeders Board of Directors for a long time member, and was a director emeritus at the time of her passing. A couple days ago, Susie O'Kane passed away. So as I say, longtime member of the New York Thoroughbred Breeders, but also she and her husband manage Highcliff Farm down in Delance, and you know, a fairly local breeding operation. Highcliff always stands out to me as the home of Scarlet Ibis, who early on in my handicapping career was a New York bred sire, who I always thought was a little bit intriguing. I think, in fact, sired some New Jersey breds as well. But Scarlet Ibis, who I understood was kind of a real handful of a sire, but sired some nice New York breds early on. But Susie O'Kane and her husband managed Highcliff. She was involved in a lot of obviously different organizations. Being the manager of Highcliff was notable, certainly, but also, and at the time, they were associated with Flying Z, who, again, when I got into the game in the New York, on the New York side of things, Flying Z, notable ownership group as well, but they had a close relationship, Highcliff and Flying Z. Susie O'Kane was also on the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation Board of Directors for quite a long time. And so just wanted to mention that, because I'm sure a lot of people, recognizable face up at Saratoga. She was at the track quite often. But as again, she had, going back a number of years, a show right here on the network. They're expecting to maybe do some kind of memorial service coming up at Saratoga, which is appropriate. So again, sad news, the passing of Susie O'Kane a little bit earlier this week. Also, they came out, as the calendar turned, they came out with the Thoroughbred, they call it Thoroughbred Racing Economic Indicators, comes out from Equibase. It's essentially the handle numbers for the United States. And I've said it many times, Thoroughbred racing just really did very well during the pandemic, has done very well during the pandemic, both 2020 and last year, 2021. Overall, wagering, the handle, the United States races 2021 compared to 2020, an 11% jump. And if you're curious as to pre-pandemic, they parse those out as well. Comparing 2021 to 2019, pre-pandemic, there was an overall jump of 10%. So from 2020 to 2021, we went up 11%. From 2019, pre-pandemic, to 2021, still a nice 10% jump. So again, I think racing really did very, very well in the pandemic period, has done. We're still in the period. You know, hopefully things are going to wrap up by the time we get into maybe, you know, Triple Crown time this year. Maybe we'll be looking at the pandemic in the rearview mirror again, hopefully. But so far the last couple of years, I think, have been good to racing. The extended look on TV has been nice in various sectors, and it's all borne out by really, really solid numbers. Purses from last year, from 2022, 2021, purses went up crazy, 35%, over 35%. So that was also a bonus. Part of that, though, I will admit, part of that, and let me see the 2019 numbers. Purses still went up, but far more incrementally, the 2019. So you look at purses, you look at race days, races, 2020 compared to 2021, you have to take into account the early days of the pandemic. If we remember, there were those five tracks that were running. So there were the early days of the pandemic, there was, you know, what, a month or two where a lot of tracks were on the sidelines that normally wouldn't be. So those numbers are a little bit deceiving. But I think overall, as I say, you can go back, the handle numbers is what is a little bit significant. And you go back 2019, pre-pandemic, regular racing calendar, to 2021 last year, where, again, pretty much on the calendar side of things, we were back to normal. It was still a 10% jump. So, again, the numbers, I thought, indicated, validated what seemed to anecdotally be true over the past couple of years, that racing kind of did a good job going through the pandemic period, and hopefully continues to do so, as I say, as we attempt to reach out and find the light at the end of this pandemic tunnel. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, as promised before, Nick Tamaro, the new announcer down at Sam Houston Park. He kicked things off on Thursday. We'll have nighttime racing. We had a little Sam Houston last night, nighttime racing tonight as well, so we'll be able to take some Sam Houston action, and we'll get a little preview of their season and more right after this. Stay tuned.
Clubhouse Racebook is the Capital Region's new home for racing and sports. 25,000 square feet of Vegas-style action with live wagering on the best horse racing from around the world. 260 flat-screen televisions and state-of-the-art wagering terminals. So don't miss out. The fun is only minutes away at 711 Central Avenue, Albany, just off exit 5 of I-90. And don't forget, if you can't make it to the clubhouse, you can always wager online 24/7 at CapitalOTB.com.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. As promised before the break, we'll talk a little Sam Houston with the new track announcer, Nick Tamereau. Our friend Nick Tamereau used to handicap here at Capital OTB. Folks may remember him from those days. Now in the announcer's booth down at Sam Houston. Nick, good morning.
Good morning, Seth. Great to be with you. And you know, you're partially responsible for this because your show was the first one I ever went on over, God, had to be 13 years ago. So it feels a little bit like home.
That's good to know. The launch pad. I like that. I was sitting in here doing the handicapping show on Thursday afternoon into the evening, and I watched some of your early races on Thursday as you kicked it off. Now, we should say, I think you did some of the quarter horse races a little bit earlier, so you got your feet wet. But talk a little bit about Thursday night and kicking it off and what it felt like to be in the booth for race number one and whatnot. Give us a little insight into kicking things off down at Sam Houston.
Yeah, you know, I was always a kid that found myself walking to the apron at a racetrack and looking up at the announcer and seeing the announcer with their binoculars and wondering, you know, how do they do it? What do they do? And I would listen to races and try and imitate announcers and think about the way they watched races and what they did. And so, you know, finally having the opportunity to do it, it was a little surreal. It didn't really seem like it was actually happening until it did. And there were actually a couple of scratches in the first race. So they loaded, really fast and left the gate. And I was kind of like, holy cow, okay, now it's time to call the race. So it was fun. It was really sort of the thrill of a lifetime. And I get to do it now for 70 plus more days. So just as much fun last night and kind of the culmination of something that I don't want to say I had dreamt about it, but I had definitely thought about getting the opportunity. And, you know, this was one that just presented itself very quickly. And so I'm very grateful to be doing it. And I can tell you, it certainly does not feel like work.
Yeah. And as I texted you to be on the show, I said, I was listening the first night. You did a great job. And I always reflect back when I talk to announcers I want to relate to the audience who think, oh boy, that seems interesting. Like to do. There was a few years ago in Maryland, they did it for a few consecutive years, and I'm sure you can find it on YouTube. But they would bring in local sports writers or sports announcers on local radio, and they would have them each call a race during the day. So there would be nine different people, and it was hilarious because you could tell they had really studied their race the night before. So the first call out of the gate would be brilliant. You'd think, oh, they really. And then by the time they got to the turn, it all fell apart. You realize how difficult that job really is. Talk a little bit about, you know, doing it and learning it and what your process is when you go into the booth for the night.
Yeah, it's certainly the farther they go, the tougher it gets, right? That's the tricky part. So, you know, I think knowing with the thoroughbreds, and the big difference between the thoroughbreds, of course, and the quarter horses is that you're talking three to four times as much. So it's one of the things that is actually very simple, and all of the veterans are very good at it, but having the ability to grab words that provide filler while you're trying to describe the action, and in the case that you might not exactly know what's going on, or you might be searching for a name in your head, that's essential. That's a huge, huge part of it. So that was something I tried to prepare myself for as much as possible. I obviously talk a lot, and I talk fast, so I felt like I would probably be able to get through that. I've been telling myself, you know, slow down, describe, get through the field, make sure you know the silks. And so memorization is the biggest thing. I think if you can avoid how many times you have to look down at your program, it really, really helps a lot. And so I've been good about that so far. You know, the brain's a little fresh early with the layoff coming in. We'll see if it holds up that way, you know, maybe in 6 weeks or so. But I think that's a big factor as well. So just, you know, being as prepared as possible and understanding also that I know these races relatively well. You know, I have a a pretty keen insight into them, doing the morning line and handicapping and putting out a tip sheet. So I think being as familiar as possible with what's going on really helps as well. And you kind of learn the nuances of the surface and the riders that have certain styles that they really like to employ over others. And it definitely helps your chances.
Well, let's kind of set up the season a little bit. First of all, I saw you were doing the pregame handicapping, and as I understand it, Jessica Paquette will be joining you.
Yeah, she's going to come down four times during the meet. Regularly, it'll be myself and Trey Stiles,
okay,
who is an eight-time, or not? I'm sorry, I think like an 18-time NHC qualifier. So
nice.
Yeah, he'll be doing it. He's a local guy here, and Jessica will be down three more times during the meet.
Nice. And set us up for the meet a little bit. Days of the week, post times, and what can we look for from Sam Houston?
Yeah, Thursday, Friday, Saturday from now until mid-February. Then we'll put Wednesdays in the mix, and it'll be 4 days a week. Wednesdays and Thursdays are 4 p.m. Central, so 5 p.m. Eastern time. And Friday and Saturday are going to be 6:45 local, 7:45 Eastern time starts. And those are generally 9 or 10 race cards, so it'll take you right up to bedtime and maybe even past it for some of you, but you can always put your wagers in ahead of time.
Yeah, very good. And give us a little idea on the human side of things. I was looking up last night, and, of course, Stu Elliott, who folks may remember from, Triple Crown Trail some years back, but last year Stu Elliott was on top, Steve Asmussen, no surprise down there, in Texas last year. But give us some idea on the human side of things, jockeys and trainers maybe we should pay attention to at this current meet.
Yeah, Stuart Elliott and Steve Asmussen are going to win a lot, and they've got 3 wins through the first 2 nights. They won the riding and training titles respectively last year by huge margins, and Stuart Elliott has now moved his base to the Texas-Oklahoma circuit to ride first call for Asmussen. Other people that are going to win a lot of races, we saw Austin Gustafson win 2 on Friday night. Carl Broberg won 2 on Friday night as well. They're going to probably be the second and third leading trainers. They both have a pretty close to a barn full of runners for the meet. And Rye Eichelberry is off to a very, very good start. He's got 6 wins in 2 nights, including a 4-bagger last night, and a very good front-end type rider. He was second in the standings last year. I think his style really fits the racetrack well. So those are the names you're going to see a lot. Some of the ones that will probably bring in a few more long shots, Ernesto Valdez-Jimenez, he had a couple of wins last night. Good rider, especially good on the front end. Jose Alvarez had an upset win last night. So did Weston Hamilton. So a lot of riders, I think, will have their turn in the barrel. Lane Luzzi will be well represented throughout the meet as well. He has a new agent, and I think he's going to be on a lot of live horses.
And we should mention, we're going to take a look at specifically a few races for tonight. But before we do that, we should mention, I heard you on with Bick this week. You were on right before I was on, so I was listening to your segment, and you were kind of mentioning the low takeout on the multi-race wagers.
Oh, yeah, low takeout on all the multi-race wagers. Every single multi-race wager is offered at a takeout of 12%.
Nice.
So really, really good opportunity for everybody to get involved there. The verticals themselves are offered at more standard takeouts. We did drop the exact takeout by a point. It's still 20, which, of course, I mean, we'd like for it to be lower, but you've got to walk before you run. So, yeah, 12% opportunities in the daily double, pick 3, pick 4, pick 5, and pick 6. None of the multis or jackpot wagers. The pick 6 is a 50-cent bet that pays out every night, and it's gotten hit the first 2 nights. So good opportunity there for sure.
All right, let's get started taking a look at some action for tonight with a kickoff leg to the late pick 4. Race number 6 tonight at Sam Houston. Allowance non-winners are 1, other than they're going to go a mile. Nice little field of 10 scheduled in the 6th. How do you see it?
Yeah, I thought this was a really fun race, very competitive, and I think the interesting thing about it is that the majority of speed is signed on towards the outside, and we've got a relatively quick run to the first turn going a mile, so I think the likelihood that the pace in here really heats up is pretty high, and I thought that might help a horse like Lethal Move. The 3, Danny Pish and Danny Sorensen, are going to combine here. They've scored a couple of wins the first 2 nights, but one with a price horse on Friday night. Last night, that one made a little bit more sense odds-wise, and I think Lethal Move is dangerous. Coming in off of one other than at Remington, where I don't know if he necessarily got the best setup that night from a pace perspective. So I think things could unfold quite a bit better here. I also don't think he'll be hurt if we continue to see some rain fall throughout the day. We did have some pretty significant overnight rain. He's run well on a field surface in the past, so he's kind of a long shot play, I think, to keep in mind at 15-1.
Yeah, 15-1 on the morning line. I like it. Let's turn the page. Race number 7, lower claiming conditioned, the non-winners of 3 conditioned claimers going a mile in the 7th. How did you see that one?
You know, I realize, and I will say this for the first time here, I'm going to tweet it in a couple of minutes, that there's a misprint in the morning line here in race number 7. Max Pandowdy, who is number 5, is supposed to be 7-2, not 3-5. So worth noting if you're handicapping this card, and we can't make a correction to it now, but I'll make an announcement at the track itself. But, this is a race where Battleship Bevo is going to be a relatively solid favorite, I would say, coming in off a good effort against Tougher. Unfortunately, Larry Stroop passed away on Friday morning.
Oh.
This Battleship Bevo's trainer. Yeah, so thoughts and prayers with his family.
Yeah.
I thought this gelding came in good form, made a middle move last time out before flattening out a little bit. But I did, and I think the reason why I'm annoyed about the morning line is that I picked Max Pandowdy. So I would want to tell people to bet Max Pandowdy, who's dropping from 15 to 75 and who just got lost out there wide on the course last time out. So I think we'll get a little bit more like the intended morning line of 7-2 or 4-1. Because he can be in a good stock and pound spot in a race that looks like it's got a relatively small amount of speed.
Yeah, good info there. And the 9th race at Sam Houston on this Saturday evening, maiden special, 3-year-old fillies going 3/4 of a mile. What did you see in tonight's finale?
Yeah, we're going to be dealing with a huge favorite here in number 3, Soaring. And the reason why I wanted to bring it up is I think it's an opportunity to take a shot against her. And I'm going to use, I would use 2 horses. Super Empire, the 6, and Dream Pyre, the 7. I think they both offer enough value in the multis to take a little bit of a shot. Super Empire got involved in a pretty hot pace on debut when dismissed at 24-1. Now I think has every right to improve with that race behind her. And Dream Pyre rallied well, breaking from the rail in that unveiling. I think she can improve as well. We've sort of seen what Soaring is. She got beaten last time out at 2-5. I don't need horses like that. So I thought there were a couple of viable alternatives there, both of whom will offer pretty serious value.
And I'll ask you, as a morning line guy, when you have a horse like Soaring, we did that handicapping show earlier, and Brian Netto and I were on, and he was looking at Gulfstream, and he said the IROD horses, IROD Ortiz, you're going to lose some value just because IROD is on board. When you're doing the morning line and you see Stuart Elliott and Asmussen teaming up, I'm assuming you automatically kind of suck a little bit of value out of a combination like that just because, you know, people are going to gravitate towards that.
Yeah, absolutely. You bake a little extra in there. Maybe you click them down a point or two, especially if they've gotten hot.
Yeah.
You know, and down here, Asmussen and Stuart Elliott could go on a run where they win, 6 races in 2 nights. And then as soon as we come back for racing the night after that, we're going to see things really go their direction even more with regards to how the public handles it. So, yeah, you always want to be aware of the hot trainer or jockey and how the public is handling them because the public loves it. You know, I would say second most to speed figures, you're dealing with human connections as really elements that move the market.
Yeah, no question about it. Nick, appreciate the visit and really – looking forward to enjoying the season and your kickoff season down there. As I said, I was watching the first night. You did a great job, and I'm sure that will continue. But as I say, appreciate the conversation this morning, setting us up for the Sam Houston season. We'll talk again.
Absolutely. I look forward to it, my friend. Always a pleasure joining you. Good luck, everybody, and I hope you're listening in tonight.
Appreciate it. Nick Tamaro, again, the new announcer down at Sam Houston a couple days into the meet, and we will have them here on the network this evening as well. So hopefully we tossed out some fun ideas for Saturday evening. All right, I'm going to wrap it up, but once again, want to remind you that here at the Clubhouse Racebook today, match bet promotion, you can swing on by, watch all the racing action, and enjoy a match bet promotion as well. That's right here at the Clubhouse Racebook this afternoon, 7-Eleven Central Avenue in Albany, the same location to enjoy NFL football action. As the season winds down tomorrow, come on in and watch football and racing here at the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. Thanks to our friends at Gulfstream for their sponsorship during the championship meet. We appreciate their support. Championship meet continuing through April 3rd. And the game plan for us is actually this year to return to the Florida Derby after a couple of pandemic years where we've been on the sidelines. Our game plan is to go down and team up with our sponsor, Gulfstream Park, and be live down there for the Florida Derby. So certainly looking forward to that trip for multiple reasons. One, to get out of the weather, go down and see some great racing live as well. And really enjoy being down at Gulfstream, because over the years we've gotten to be friendly with the TV crew and all the folks in the media office as well. So it's always a fun trip down there for, as I say, multiple reasons, not the least of which is the weather. All right, we're going to wrap it up for Racing Across America. But as always, we'll be back in about an hour or so. Gulfstream kicks off at noon. So, yeah, we'll be back in about an hour or so with OTB Live for a Saturday afternoon. We'll take you through the afternoon of racing. Oh, I should mention, I didn't mention it earlier, congratulations to yesterday's Pick 3 bankroll team. I actually wound up hitting both of the sequences, and it wound up okay. You know, it's a pick three bankroll, so it's hard to knock it out of the park unless there's some kind of crazy pick three. But on an eight race card at Turfway last night, there was obviously six pick threes. And we hit the second longest price and the third longest price. And we probably could have had the longest price of the pick threes. We hit the 3-4-5, races 3-4-5, pick three, and then 6-7-8. But the biggest price was 2-3-4. Well, our top pick in the second race won. And obviously, we had also used winners in the third and the fourth, because that was our second sequence. So I'm just not sure how I would have played that exactly, because both of the picks we hit, it's a 50-cent pick three, and we hit both of them for a dollar. So I'm not sure I would have parsed the ticket out exactly the same. So I think we wound up as good as we could have yesterday. We hit both pick threes for a dollar. We took our $100 pick three bankroll and knocked it up to, I think it was $297, $298. So the pick three bankroll teams consist of five people. And so everybody got about $60 of free Capital OTB money. So courtesy of Capital OTB, you got a few free dollars to play with this weekend and enjoy. Blown it up even further. But it was a fun night last night at Turfway. We did the Twilight edition of OTB Live and covered into the third race at Turfway and kind of kicked off our pick three bankroll. And then I went home and was watching later on to see how the pick threes did. And it all worked out nicely. The early pick three, we kicked it off with a $28 horse. And so that wound up being a pretty decent little pick three for a buck. And as I say, just about tripled our money, and everybody wound up with a nice little chunk of change in their account if you jumped in. Don't forget, all of these promotions, you are invited to put your name in the hat and maybe get selected for the bankroll teams and whatnot and wind up a little free money. Sometimes we hit, sometimes we don't. Sometimes knock it out of the park. I mean, Mike Calley and what was it, Preakness Weekend had the bankroll that hit, I want to say $9,000. Everybody wound up with a real good chunk of money in their account. I had the crazy show pool that was a couple thousand dollars up at Saratoga. And so you can wind up with a nice amount of money in the account. And like I said, last night, $60 free money is okay. So again, congratulations to everybody who's on the bankroll team, and thanks for playing. All right, I'm going to wrap it up. Racing Across America is in the rearview mirror. We are now looking in the windshield towards OTB Live on a Saturday afternoon. That'll be up in about an hour. We'll see you then.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.